Welcome to the Music Business Podcast presented by Hypebot.com. I'm your host, Alex May, and today we're taking an in-depth look at Lander. Lander is an automated online mastering service which allows music creators to upload their songs and get professionally sounding, fully mastered results in just a few minutes. Make sure to subscribe to the Music Business Podcast on iTunes and keep up to date with our newest releases on SoundCloud. If you enjoy the show, please spread the word and consider giving us a rating in your favorite podcast app. To help us fully understand the process behind Lander, today I'm going to speak with Justin Evans, the company's chief creative officer. Welcome to the show today, Justin. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Not too bad over here.
Good.
So what exactly is your role at Lander?
I'm the co-founder and chief creative officer at Lander. So I founded the company with one of the students from Queen Mary University of London, where the research that underpins Lander came from. And then since then, I've kind of taken on the main creative focus. So I'm responsible for what the product looks and feels like, and I'm responsible for the marketing, and I'm responsible for kind of the creative, ongoing creative vision of the company.
Very cool.
It's a fun job.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
How did you get started in that role? You said you were over there in the University of London.
Well, I wasn't a student there. So I have a background. I've bounced back and forth between digital entrepreneurship and music my entire life. I've kind of gone back and forth between one and the other. And I had a digital agency in Montreal for quite a number of years, and I sold it. And at the end of that process, there's an incubator in Montreal called Tandem Launch that specializes in university technology transfer. So they go all around the world and look at cool technologies and then try and bring them to market. And they found out about my history with music and entrepreneurship and digital stuff. And they sent me to Queen Mary University of London to look at this cool, amazing body of technology, where I met Stuart, my co-founder. And basically what Stuart and a number of students there were looking into was how things like machine learning and all these things that are transforming the world could transform audio practices. So how could we do things that human engineers did but automate them using kind of bleeding edge technology? And I was so excited when I saw this technology that I jumped in full force and co-founded the company. And then now, that was about 3.5 years ago. And then basically up until about a year and a bit ago, we were working on commercializing that technology base. And then a year ago, we launched Lander to the world. And then now, since that year, we've now mastered 1.2 million songs and are mastering about 120,000 songs a month. So it was pretty exciting. It's been a pretty exciting year.
Yeah, it's definitely something that, I mean, if you had mentioned automated mastering, maybe, I mean, even like a decade ago or something, I think a lot of people wouldn't have even known how to begin the approach towards that. So it's cool to see something like this really take off and have that kind of reaction among the music community.
For sure. I mean, I think that what we're doing wouldn't have been possible a decade ago. Just the technology and the sense of what was possible, it wouldn't have been possible to do it 10 years ago. And then I also think that, you know, people's acceptance of technology has really, really shifted. Like, people are used to things like Instagram making your photos look cool or whatever now, where it's like, and it's really interesting generationally. We certainly, like, we have no resistance from younger people, like our mm-hmm. that use it, or people that are used to technology. And then there's kind of an older, group of people that I think are still kind of like, whoa, how is that possible? You know, or that can't work, or, you know, whatever that, but I think it's because they just haven't grown up with kind of technology doing the miracles that it does around us all the time.
Right, right. Now, I've got to admit, as someone coming from an audio engineering background, I was initially skeptical of the thought of online automatic mastering, but yeah, after uploading a few tracks to Lander, I was pretty impressed with the results. I mean, it's definitely it gives you a good variety of tracks that you can listen to, as far as just uploading your individual track, and you have a few different versions that you can pick from, whether it's just a little subtle touch with some dynamic evening out of the track, or just really kind of slamming it through a compressor or a limiter or anything and making it really hit harder.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing for us was that we were we're really excited about how having people be able to hear it, because we knew that the engine was doing some pretty incredible things, and so this is why it was free originally, and why anyone can just put a track there and listen to it, because we knew what the promise of it is pretty high, and it's really, we knew that if people listened to it, it would be successful. So it was just like, okay, let's make this super friendly and give people a really easy way to try this, because we know if they try it, they'll be convinced. So that's been pretty cool.
Yeah, I was really impressed at the overall workflow of it. I mean, you don't see a whole lot of websites where it's just as simple as dragging and dropping an MP3 or a WAV file and then having a result in less than 5 minutes for the few that I tried out. So that was really neat. It was a quick turnaround time. And like I said, I was real impressed with just the overall professionalism of how it sounded and the ability to kind of craft your own mix around that particular product.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I think one of the secret weapons of Lander is that because it's so fast and so simple, is that it gives people a really interesting level of control over their mastering, and in a way that people probably never had before. You know, you can't go to a mastering studio with a human being and not, if you get back something you don't like, remix your track, resend it to them. It's just, it takes too much time. It costs too much money. We have people redoing the tracks over and over again until it's just perfect for them, and they really have control over the final sound. And I think it's one of the reasons that people that love Lander really love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I seem to remember reading something on the website too, kind of to the degree that it's saying, you know, there's always going to be a separation between having somebody in a recording studio or a mastering studio, in this case, doing hands-on human back and forth, and a program. But it's that bridge between the two, that gap between them is definitely becoming a lot smaller as technology increases. And I think for a lot of people, especially starting out musicians, that's in a lot more attractive process, just rather than getting into a studio and thinking, okay, I've got to shell out a few thousand dollars for this master to get it to sound like some of the other tracks I'm hearing, versus using Lander, a site like that, to get it to sound very competitive but still affordable and within reach for a lot of people starting out, even professional bands in that sense.
Well, and I think even more like than just startup musicians, like there's so many use cases for stuff that, you know, a tool like Lander and what it does for your music is so, so, so useful. I think a really good analogy is drum machines. You know, when drum machines first came out, people were like, oh my God, this is, you can't use these things. They're, you know, they're terrifying, and they're not, and you know, now, and then they're going to, oh, we're going to put all the drummers out of work and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, now there's drum machines used on a lot of tracks, and there's still a lot of great drummers. So, and I think it really makes something else possible, and it puts a certain kind of level of creativity and control in people's hands that they didn't have before. And it also makes a new kind of practice is possible. And I think that's one of the coolest things about Lander.
Yeah. I mean, I think with any kind of technological innovation, a lot of it is reliant on the fact that you're still using it in its full human creative element, rather than relying on it as just a kind of a cop-out for anything. But with any kind of technology, there's going to be that back and forth between the human interaction and then just plugging something into a machine and having it spit back out some variables or anything.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Now, mastering is the final process in preparing music for distribution, where mixed audio is made to sound more uniform from track to track. This can include level adjustment by single and multi-band compression, equalization, stereo enhancement, and limiting. Can you give us a rundown of the mastering process used by Lander to achieve these results?
Well, I mean, it kind of does a different thing for every track. So when you put your track in, it breaks it down into, you know, like the way that Shazam or any kind of music recognition stuff, it breaks it down into a kind of digital fingerprint, and then it compares it to this kind of space of like a multi-dimensional kind of genre space that we've created, and of data that we've analyzed, and it says, okay, this song kind of fits in this part, it's this kind of music. And then it builds a processor chain for it. So, you know, a country song might have different processors than a hip-hop track, or a hip-hop track's going to have different processors than, you know, a pop track or whatever. So some of those things that you mentioned might be, like a multi-band compressor, for example, might be really used and with a certain kind of filter model and stuff would be used in electronic music. And then maybe there isn't even a multi-band compressor in the stack for a certain kind of rock music. So it really, it's listening to your track and saying, you know, like a mastering engineer would do, is saying, this is a reference track. I want to get this kind of sound, and how did the sound happen? And then build a logical set of processors for that. And then it analyzes the actual musicality and the quality of the music and all that stuff, and uses a bunch of really cool intelligence to say, okay, well, we need to set the limiter, you know, based on the analysis of millions of tracks, we need to set the EQ this way, we need to set the limiter this way, and then it processes your file.
Yeah, that was another one of the things that I was pretty impressed about, is just the adaptivity to the overall model of Lander, how it learns from different music, and the more music that's processed by the service, really the more it grows.
Yeah, there's a great, I was really blown away by this cool article that came out in Ask Audio maybe like a month ago, where they analyzed, they took like different versions of Lander through time and compared them to each other. And it was like, you could really see it. Like, you could really hear how the engine had grown and changed. It was really cool.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up the Shazam analogy there too, because that's been a pretty successful product with their whole music genome thing there, where it has recommendations based on different genres and different artists. So it's really cool to see that from an audio engineering standpoint, and see that
for sure
adapting towards that particular model.
Yeah, like using a music genome kind of idea for actual production instead of a recommendation is super fun. And I think that's a really simple way to understand Lander. That's basically kind of what we're doing.
Now, can you give us like a bird's eye view of how the adapting process to that is accomplished? Does it look at different things more like the tempo, the type of instruments used, the overall volume level, or how does it use its algorithms to determine what's best for the mastering process?
What's super cool is it's machine learning E, so it doesn't, like, the things that you're talking about are really human things, and machines, you know, if you can say that machines listen, they pay attention to different things. So it's like low-level spectral features and time variant features and stuff, and it's creating a fingerprint of the song using the kind of, it's hard to translate into human language. It's not things so much like tempo or how humans think about music. It's more this kind of low level spectral features and stuff. And so but then how it's deriving the targets and stuff, once it's done that, is through having processed hundreds of thousands of tracks. So it's identifying, I don't want to go too far into, you know, to the secret sauce either, but it's really identifying your track and putting it in relationship to all these other tracks that we've used to train what kind of processors and how they should work.
I also saw that there's a few different tiers of the Lander service. For our listeners that aren't familiar with it, at the moment you can have two MP3 masters completely free of charge. Those are sent to your email address after you upload them. I saw there were a few other options as well, just if you want your masters done in an MP3 format, in a higher resolution WAV format. Can you walk us through the different tiers that Lander offers for different musicians?
Sure. I mean, they're basically, like, I'm just pulling up the website so I can remember what they are. but they're basically based on audio output quality. So the free one is low-res MP3s, and it's just to give people a chance to understand how the service works. And with any of these programs, too, you can always buy higher resolution output per track. So when you sign up, we just give you free two. Like we said, we want people to hear it so they can hear the incredible mastering job Lander does and get believe in it and see the value for their own music. And it's so much cooler being able to put your own music through it, and so much more real of an experience than going and listening to somebody else's track mastered on a page, you know, a beat or whatever. Like, this is, because also that's really easy to doctor. Like, you just pick something that you know is going to sound great or whatever. So this is really like, here, try Lander, hear what it sounds like. It's awesome. And then the middle tier that actually is extremely popular is $14 a month. And that is unlimited high and low res MP3 output and a discount off uncompressed output. So a lot of people that use Lander as a creative tool or as a studio tool use that, because, I mean, incredibly affordable and lets you have kind of unlimited output. And then the Pro for people that are really putting out a lot of content or studios that are using it or whatever, it's $39 a month for unlimited waves. And if you compare that to the cost of mastering and the cost of how much mastering is for even a single track, you know, it's like kind of unbelievably affordable.
Right, right. Yeah, really. I mean, for that one fee a month, it's pretty much a fraction in my experience of what you could get a fully mastered song done for in a studio. And it's the results are very on par with each other from what I've heard so far.
Awesome. And you know, I mean, like, think about it. It's like $299 a year for the Pro account. That's like, you know, less than I've paid for one song, getting one song mastered before.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, there's also been a lot of talk about just overall audio quality and resolution lately. We've heard the whole spiel with Tidal You know, Beats Music and all these things saying lossless audio, uncompressed waves, things like that.
Yeah.
What's your take on all of that? Just information on there. Yeah.
I'm so happy about this. Like, I mean, I think we're at a really exciting moment for audio, and that, you know, it hasn't quite hit yet, but I think that we're headed back to really audio quality really mattering, and that we've kind of bottomed out with audio quality not sound, not, you know, convenience over audio quality being the paradigm. Mm-hmm. And I think that because of bandwidth increasing, because of new streaming technologies, because of you know, new compression technologies, all these different things, music is going to be able to sound great again, and it'll become important that it sounds great again. And so we're going to be releasing a 24-bit output option very shortly.
Oh, okay.
And we've been doing that in the background the whole time. So, for example, for Bob Weir's TRI Studios, and Bob has this super cool initiative, from the Grateful Dead has this super cool initiative where they're trying to put 24-bit streaming on RDO of all their back catalog stuff that they do at TRI, and we've literally mastered that, like, hundreds and hundreds of tracks for them. So for that, and with 24-bit output, and I'm so excited about the world kind of slowly coming back to great audio mattering again, and I think the whole world of streaming and stuff has been so awesome, and there's more music being shared and all this stuff. So I'm not bemoaning the current state of the world, but I think both that kind of existence of all kinds of great music being in the world, access to music everywhere, and great audio can coexist, which is super awesome.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the evolution of that just come from, you know, your vinyl records in the past, and then it was cassette tapes, and then CDs, and for the longest time, and I mean still now to a large degree, just the typical audio resolution format's been 16-bit, 44.1 kilohertz. And it's really interesting to see that kind of evolve, especially now when a lot of people are primarily listening to music on things like their iPhones or, you know, iPod or portable MP3 player. Or
their computer speakers, you know, like, I mean, it's really interesting because you think, like, there's been so many eras of music listening and so many different ways that people have listened to music through time. And I think it's just going to get more and more plural, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's just going to be more ways to listen to music and more access to music. And that, to me, as a musician and as someone who loves music, makes me really happy.
So you mentioned previously that Lander was developed by a group of master's and PhD students from Queen Mary University of London's Center for Digital Music. Is that correct?
Yeah.
You kind of touched on that earlier, how it was just initially started. Was that just kind of brought up as just the think tank or like a grad school product?
It was a research
group
at that. So Center for Digital Music's really cool. It's one of the most visionary programs in music technology in the world. And they basically have, like, research groups that cluster around a concept or an idea and then work, you know, for a number of years on these concepts. And this was one of the major thrusts of study for that time period. And it was really cool when we founded the company, we were able to make a deal with the university where we were able to found the company and have exclusive rights to the technology.
That's very nice.
Base that all the students had worked on.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I got so much noise in the background. I apologize.
Oh, it's fine. Add some characters. So.
That's great.
Now, you're based in Montreal, correct?
Yeah, Montreal, Canada.
Okay, pretty cool. Now, being that you've been there and then over in the over in London, do you notice a big difference just in terms of audio engineering, just the, like the different schools of thought? I know there was for a while, I mean, a lot of people think of classic rock as this big British influenced sound. You've got the Beatles with Abbey Road, all these classic rock bands, Led Zeppelin, The Who, that are from the UK. And a lot of people think that that's kind of where really the recording revolution got its start over there. Do you see a lot of difference or parallels between just these transatlantic recording methods?
You know, I think that, again, like, plurality is kind of everything about the universe that we live in right now. Like, I wouldn't say that the sound engineering in London is different than sound engineering in Montreal, but I would say that there's a million sound engineerings in London and a million sound engineerings in Montreal. Like, there's so much plurality. Like, Montreal is a great example. You know, we have, like, the influences in Montreal are like everything from the, you know, the mind-blowingly awesome Hotel de Tango that is all still tape. You know, like, they're super analog fetishists and do this super incredible, you know, beautiful, beautiful audio engineering that's really from a really particular aesthetic. And then we also have Tiga and like, you know, super amazing electronic music, and Montreal's had this super visionary electronic scene forever that is almost the dead opposite of that. So, you know, like, and there's an incredible underground hip hop scene in Montreal, and there's, you know, like, there isn't, I don't think these things are really tied to location anymore. I think that there's so much, you know, I was in Nashville, and there's like Chris Mara's like Welcome to 1979 there that's super mind blowing, and then there's also super, you know, everywhere you go, there's just such variety of, so I don't think it's really locatable to a place, but I think that you have to be really aware of all the stuff that's going on. And thanks to the global village that is the internet, it's really easy to kind of get access to everything from everywhere and to be influenced by everything from everywhere. And to me, that kind of hybridity is really wonderful.
Yeah, I think you mentioned just having global awareness with that, and I think that's a really great way to put it, because a lot of the music genres are so heavily influenced by just other locations, and it's just that it's
and by each other now too, man. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's so hybrid, right? Like, it's really, I think that's also one of the really exciting things about the right now that we live in. It's really cool.
Yeah, I had somebody the other day ask me what my favorite decade of music was, and I kind of felt weird answering it this way, but I mean, I've answered it was pretty much now, just because there's so much on that feeds on each other and influences it from cross genres. I mean,
and eras and time. And, you know, like, I mean, if you, that's funny. I was on a panel at, I can't remember which music conference, but some music conference. And we were talking about, like, there was a baby boomer kind of panelist guy who was saying, you know, oh, the internet's made music so terrible, and asking me what I thought about the impact of the internet and how music had become, there'd just become so much bad music. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, this makes no sense to me. Like, there's so much awesome music, and I don't actually know anybody that listens to bad music. Like, do you listen to music you don't like? And there's just so much access to so much music that's so great, and so many kinds of music, and like discovering stuff is so easy, and you can go so deep into, you know, whatever you want, like from like 1920s banjo music to like Saharan cell phone recording music, you know, like, it's crazy. So, like, to me, this is one of the most exciting times to be a music lover and to be a musician.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been said before that with all this global access to just different types of music, really, there is a lot more out there. And a lot of people, I think, just have just equate that with meaning that there's a lot more music and the majority of it's bad, which I think really it's just there's more music. So some of the bad stuff becomes a little more prevalent. But at the same time, there's so much more good music and really cutting edge variety coming out on a day-to-day basis, that it's really reliant on the consumer and the listener to go in and kind of put in the effort to discover a lot of that. And especially now with all these engines like Spotify and Shazam, SoundHound,
yeah, oh yeah,
where you can discover similar artists towards your taste, and with the big iTunes or the Apple Music now too, that's making it a lot more accessible to the average music listener.
I think also, you know, like for me, good and bad are such funny terms for music. Like I really have at different points in my life thought music was bad that now I think is amazing.
You know? Right, right. And
have had music that I think is amazing now. Thought, I mean, the other way around, like it moves around, and there's no kind of, the thing that drives me, I think, thank God we're finally leaving a world where it's like, oh, this is the music that is good and this is the music that is bad, like that by tastemakers or whatever. I mean, there's so much possibility for learning and understanding and hearing that's super exciting.
Right, right. Yeah, I think there is certainly a lot more variety, and especially now with more of these festivals and things like that, there's really something for everybody. And even now, a lot of these festivals, like if you're familiar with like the Warped Tour, like Glastonbury Festival, or things like that, I mean, those are really starting to branch out more and go outside of what they were initially founded on. Like, you know, the Warped Tour just being punk bands. Now you've got some electronic acts and some hip hop acts and more acoustic acts and things like that. So it's very neat to see things just kind of evolve in this all encompassing melting pot, more or less.
Well, and the one thing I can be really hoped for is that, you know, we can have that much music and people can actually make a living making it. That would be the best.
Right, right.
Right. You know, like, I mean, it's part of our mission at Lander too, is to make it easier for, it's a great time to be a musician, a great time to be a listener in many ways. And then it's really economically challenging and to produce music. And so I think one of the good sides of technology is that we can, you know, part of, I think, all technologists' mission in the music world should be making it economically easier for musicians, because it's a really challenging time that way.
Right. Yeah, especially more so now. I mean, gone are the days where you can have just this big band like Led Zeppelin or something just be the be-all, end-all, the rock, and just traveling around the world and that being the only job. And now really it's a lot more reliant on individual bands having a myriad of different responsibilities, whether
and it's economic streams and like be it sync or whatever, like, you know, like there's so many, yeah, it's a really different reality for making music now than I think ever.
Right. Yeah. I've especially noticed too, that a lot of the bands I listen to are more starting to, while they're touring around and doing things like that, that's supporting them and they're able to fund the band and continue to go on that. And then during their downtime, more and more people, it seems like, are getting into the recording side of it and doing your engineering, your mixing, mastering, recording. So it's cool to see those parallels between both sides of like the glass and the recording studio, pretty much.
Absolutely.
Now, especially more over the past few years, there seems to be a large misconception in the music world that mastering is just more or less become a synonym that just means making my track really loud. What does mastering really mean for musicians today, if you could put that in your own words?
Sure. I mean, I think that, I mean, for me, I think what mastering means, especially today, goes back to the thing that you're talking about the plurality, or we were talking about the plurality of listening environments, right? Like, it's really, really, really one thing to have your song sound great in your studio on whatever system you're using, in whatever shape room you're in. It's really might sound terrible on your computer speakers because your room was the wrong shape and or whatever, and it might sound bad on your car or, you know, in all these different places. So one of the key things with mastering is that it should make your song sound great wherever you're listening to it and on all those different platforms, and, you know, as that your song's going to sound comparative to what, you know, for me, when I experience a well-mastered track of my own music, I'm like, it sounds like that other music that I love, you know? And I can't do that without mastering. So it's this kind of last moment of volume, of contour, of like color, of, you know, all these great things that makes your music A, sound like what, you know, that song you love sounds like, and comparative quality to that other thing, and then also makes it sound great wherever you're listening to it.
Right, right. I'd like to get a little back and just touch again just on kind of converting people just to seeing what all Lander can do. Now, I was reading through a couple of your previous interviews and saw that you drew a parallel between auto mastering, like that Lander does, and when the autofocus came out for the cameras. And I thought clever analogy for that.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, like, when people are resistant to these kind of things, you know, I think even better analogy is like digital cameras to film cameras, right? Like when that first came out, everyone's like, oh, I'm not going to use that. That's and now nobody shoots with film anymore. Or people shoot with film in a really, really, you know, like very, very rarely and very specialized. And so I think that these kind of automations, what's really cool about these kinds of automations is they actually make stuff more creative and unleash more creativity and make more stuff happen. And that's all, I think, quite exciting. But there's usually this kind of frictive resistance when disruptive technologies happen at first.
Now, what's been the
main... We're all used to that now, right? Like, it's almost like a cliche at this point. It's like, oh, people are going to resist. Oh, then they love it. Oh, they, you know, like, it's happened so many times with so many things in the, like, in our lifetimes, you know, like, it's just like, it almost just becomes a, like, the narrative arc's pretty predictable.
Yeah, almost like a rite of passage.
It's like, oh, there's that thing, everyone, oh, now everyone's using it. Oh, okay, great, now it's almost invisible. You know, like, it's really, I think that's really cool.
Now, what's been the main hurdle for you guys to get over just in that kind of aspect, just as far as converting people over to the Lander belief?
I think mostly it's just getting people to try it. Like, as soon as people try it, they're pretty convinced, and we don't have a lot of resistance once people are using it. So it's really almost getting past the people that are like, you know, it's like that friend of your, like, everyone has one of those friends that's like, some movie comes out and they just hate it on principle and they won't even go see the movie and make a judgment about it before they see it. You know, like, it's getting past those people. It's the people that will not try it because they can't believe that, you know, but even that wave has passed. Like, the difference in 1 year of, I remember when we first launched Lander and people were really freaked out by it. And then now everyone's kind of like, oh yeah, Lander, cool, I use that. Or like, I use that for this, you know, like, it's really some of the, even the biggest critics we had from sound engineering messaging boards and stuff. It's hilarious. One of them, like one of the moderators from the board, reached out to us and we did a piece on his blog and about him. And he was like, yeah, I love this. I use it for all this stuff. It's really great.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of, I think the important thing that's really key, and also what's really helped us with that, is that we don't have any goal we don't have any pretense of trying to be the Bob Ludwigs of the world, you know, like we're doing a thing that's different than that, and we really have immense respect for that other thing. And so I think that comes through in how we talk about Lander and in how we pitch it and how we communicate what it's about. And that's, we have a lot of respect for the art.
Right. Yeah. I hadn't really heard of Lander prior to a couple weeks ago. And then just something popped up on Hypebot when I was doing one of the other podcasts. And then not even a few days later, I saw a feature in, I think it was Electronic Musician Magazine. Just about Lander. And I thought, oh, this is really cool. It was interesting. Just the coverage that they had on it and how it was being marketed. And like you had mentioned, it doesn't come off as something saying like, this is the be all end all of services. You know, it's going to completely eliminate the mastering engineer. It's a very open and honest thing about it. It's just saying, look, this is a product that can really help musicians get their music out there and giving it a professional edge just right off the bat.
Yeah. We've been like really musician focused from the beginning too. And I think it's not like, it really comes back to what I was saying about the responsibility of technologists right now that are making music. It's like, it's really tough being a musician, and like the whole kind of genesis of the students that were working on this and my personal investment in it has been about, like, you know, trying to make it the world a little bit easier for musicians and really, you know, the songwriting community, going to Nashville, and the songwriting community loves this because when you're pitching a song, you know, like if your audio quality isn't up to scratch, that can sway people's reception to the song that you're pitching. You know, like, there's these kinds of things where it's like, wow, okay, I don't have $500 to spend on mastering, but I've got to get this song heard by, you know, by the people that might buy it. And, you know, if you have that if you have that, something like Lander, it really levels the playing field for people. And I love that we're doing that. That's a really one of the most satisfying things for me when I hear from those folks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool now, just the different avenues that bands have and artists and just musicians in general. It's cool hearing about just more and more bands saying like, yeah, we recorded this in like, you know, our mom's basement or something like that, or in a just like a makeshift studio here and there, and just basically throwing everything together and kind of just seeing those bands get a nice start out of something that they just kind of just put in all this effort towards and made work for themselves, rather than having to go and dish out a whole bunch of cash for different recording and mixing and mastering services and pre-production, post-production, all of this. So it's a very interesting twist that's really come around the past few decades in seeing bands become a lot more accessible and getting music out to a more wider reach audience.
I think this is one of the, you know, on a bigger scale even than musicians, like, we live in an age where creativity is like the tools for being creative. Any kind of creativity are just getting so much easier and so much more accessible and unspecialized. And I think that is, I think, you know, to me, unlocking all of humans' creativity is one of the most awesome things that's possible, and that everybody should be able to be creative, and everybody, you know, lowering the barrier to entry for people being able to express themselves creatively is like one of the greatest things about what's happening in the world right now.
Yes, definitely. There are becoming a lot less barriers just between pretty much everything. Like you said, like if you had mentioned to me a few years ago, I'd be doing a podcast on a website just in my apartment on a couple microphones. It wouldn't sound like, you know, anything remotely professional, but hopefully it somewhat does now. So
yeah, and it's going to get easier and easier for it to, and that's so awesome, you know. And like that's I think that's one of the coolest things about the world that we live in right now.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, I think that's a good point to just kind of end on here. What do you see the next big trend becoming in music or music technology or anything like that?
You know, I think that there's a couple things. Like, for me, I think that you'll see more people, like the line between musician and non-musician gets blurrier. More people are creating stuff, more sources of stuff is coming. And I think there'll be a blurrier and blurrier line between user-generated content and professional content. And that, like, and, you know, people grabbing samples from stuff that people have made on their iPhone and that winding up in a real song and, you know, like all this kind of stuff. I love this. This is really exciting to me, and I can already see that emerging, and I really, I think it's really, really exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a really cool perspective to see happen in front of our eyes.
Yeah. And music's just going to keep, you know, what I love about music. It's, if someone told me what music was going to be like now, 10 years ago, I would not believe what they were saying to me. And so I am so excited to see what music's going to be in 10 years, you know, and what it's going to sound like, and what it will, the many different things it will sound like. And that's super exciting to me.
Yes. Well, very cool.
That was really great chatting with you. That was really awesome. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on the show. Is there anything else you want to add about Lander?
Yeah, we're going to be doing keep an eye on us, around September. There's some really, I'm not allowed to announce what it is, but we've got some really, really, really cool new stuff coming. And so, you know, anybody that wants to keep an eye on the cool technology that we're up to and the kind of stuff that we're doing, just come to our blog and enter your email and we'll keep you updated about all the cool stuff coming down the pipe.
Well, sounds great. I'm excited to hear what's going to be going on.
Awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Well, thanks for coming by the show today.
Yeah, real pleasure talking to you. Thanks. Sorry for the dog noise in the background.
Oh, no worries. Add some character to it. Well, that wraps up today's episode. Thanks again to Justin Evans for taking the time to sit down and talk with us about Lander, and thanks again to Hypebot for putting this out. Keep up with our newest releases by subscribing to the Music Business Podcast on iTunes, and as always, please rate us highly if you've enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.